This podcast is brought to you by the Everything Nut Allergy Cookbook, available wherever books are sold. Find details at foodallergypi.com. And be sure to join me over on Facebook, the Food Allergy PI Community Group, where we can connect, support, and share. Welcome to the Food Allergy Talk podcast. While the topics covered on this podcast are not medical advice and are simply the opinions and views of both myself and those interviewed, you will hear me make mention of my holistic nutrition certification. You should know that this is not a medical license, and you should always consult a licensed board-certified allergist. I'm Lisa Horn of Food Allergy PI, host of Food Allergy Talk. I'm a holistic nutritionist, cookbook author, and food allergy community advocate and blogger. I'm married with 5 children, ages 6, 8, 11, 13, and 16. My oldest, Stetson, is the only one of my 5 children with food allergies. He has both gained and lost food allergies through this journey. Anaphylactic to peanut and shellfish since he was a baby, and newly diagnosed with pecan and garlic, which, by the way, is the hardest of all of them. It is in everything. My second oldest, Isabella, is dairy intolerant, and my second youngest is gluten-free and in the diagnosis process of determining if she has celiac. We live in southeastern Arizona, where I homeschool all 5 of our children. I got involved in the food allergy community through support outreach and fundraising in 2009. Later, in 2012, I initiated legislation to allow for stock epinephrine to be available for all students in Arizona schools. In 2018, I began focusing my energy on reaching out to the food allergy community through my blog, Food Allergy PI, because isn't that what we all are? We're detectives, we're investigators, reading all the labels, finding out what's safe. I share there my own experience caring for food allergies, travel, dining out, product finds, and recipe creation. In 2021, I authored the Everything Nut Allergy Cookbook. Most recently, in 2022, I joined WebMD as a contributing writer for their food allergy blog series. And now, in its 3rd year, I have continued to bring you the Food Allergy Talk podcast as a way to continue building community and helping others in the food allergy world. My goal is to help you not only learn from my journey and those interviewed on the Food Allergy Talk podcast, but to grow and gain confidence in all facets of living a full, whole life with food allergy, body, mind, and spirit. Health, safety, social, emotional, and spiritual well-being, all of which are impacted by living with food allergies, as well as for those caring for others with food allergies. This is Food Allergy Talk, where you can come to connect and leave uplifted, empowered, and ready for success. Welcome back to the Food Allergy Talk podcast. If you're living it or have a question about it, we are talking about it. I'm your host, Lisa Horn of Food Allergy PI. On this episode of Food Allergy Talk, I welcome Sarah of Food Allergies OTG on the go. She is also co-founder of a food allergy family camp called Camp Bumblebee. She has 2 children with food allergies and manages a combination of food allergens, including milk, egg, peanut, walnut, chestnut, hazelnut, and sunflower seeds. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Now tell us a little bit about your family, your children's ages, their food allergy story. Kind of everybody has like a little, you know, what was the first reaction? Because oftentimes that's how, you know, we kind of fall into this world. How did you find out they were allergic? And then how did that, all of those things, that journey, if you will, how did that lead to your social media presence and the family food allergy camp?
Yeah, so I have a 5 and a 3-year-old. My oldest had his first allergic reaction when he was about 7 months old. Allergies were not even on my radar, as so many families, you know, have the same story. You never knew anybody with food allergies. You never thought as you were giving your baby the first bites of food that this was going to change your life. And so I was on my way to work And I was making myself, I think, like an apple and peanut butter. And I decided, well, he's 7 months. I dipped my finger in some peanut butter. And I'm talking the smallest, teeniest little bit amount on my finger. And stuck it on his tongue. And, you know, research says now that generally kids don't react on their first exposure to an allergen. It's usually the second or the third. But for my child, it was immediate. I'm talking within seconds. He was swollen and blotchy, and clearly something was wrong. But again, I was so unfamiliar with food allergies that I wasn't sure what was happening. Thankfully, my sister is a pediatric nurse practitioner. I called her and she said, "Sarah, I think he's having an allergic reaction." It was that foreign to me that I didn't even really even connect that this is a very, common allergenic food. And he was having this response, "Oh gosh, maybe he's allergic." It seems crazy to say that now, but truly in that moment, I was kind of blindsided. I had no idea that this could be or would be my life. So from that point, after kind of dealing with that reaction, we took him to an allergist based on a recommendation from my pediatrician and got him tested for other things. We learned then that he was allergic to his other allergens that you listed, things like milk and egg. And we then just kind of avoided them and got the prescription for the EpiPen, similar to, again, in a lot of people's stories. And we just kind of did our best, but it felt really daunting. I always kind of say it was like a tidal wave. You know, you're staring at it and you are given very little information and then you're just told to swim, grin and bear it sort of. And it felt really scary. And so after that, after kind of months of living that way and doing just an unending amount of research, whenever we tried to go anywhere at all. I was going to Colorado with our little family, and I decided, you know, if we're going to try to eat out at all, I'm doing hours of research to figure out the best places. Why don't I put together a social media account and just try to share this with anybody who it might be interesting to or helpful for? And maybe it'll take some of that work out of it for them. Like, why should everybody have to do hours and hours of research? And so I started it that way and just figured it would be a kind of wherever we go, share how we got there, any kind of helpful tips that helped us. And it surprised me that I just kind of showed up and posted when I could and how I was feeling. And I realized that people really craved a sounding board for their feelings and for information. So it grew from there. And I've loved being a part of the online community because there really is such a gap and such a need for community in that allergy space.
There is such a gap that needs to be bridged. And it's been that way for years. It's gotten better. I will say it's gotten better. My child that has anaphylactic food allergies, a little bit older than your kiddos. He is 16. And so it has gotten better, but there's still so much work to be done. And I love that you share your story. And the more people that I have on this podcast and they share their story, it's really crazy just how similar they are. And I think I never get tired of asking for another person to share their story, another person to share their story, because there's something about hearing another person, another person, another person. And you're like, okay, I'm not alone. That totally happened to me. Like it might look a little different, but you can relate. You're like, same thing. Oh, I can relate to that. And there's something that just feels good about that when you are new to this community. And even when you've been a part of the community for a long time, like my son's 16, there's just something to knowing that you're not alone.
Right. And there's always changes in every phase. You know, you're dealing with stuff with a 16-year-old that I haven't experienced yet, but then I'm dealing with stuff that I didn't really kind of think of whenever my kid was first diagnosed. So when he was 7 months old, or even when he started crawling, those are challenges, right? Because they're crawling all over the floor and you're like, people are walking on this floor and maybe they have allergens on their shoes or they're putting everything in their mouth. And, you know, that is kind of the big giant struggle struggle at those kind of early years, yes. toddler times.
The things that people don't even think of.
Oh,
you would
yes.
not ever think of, are there allergens on your shoe?
Right.
And but you do.
Yeah.
My husband went to eat at Texas Roadhouse when my son was really little. Oof. And he came home and he's all, oh, we went to Texas Roadhouse today for lunch. And I was like, I just all of a sudden looked at him with disgust and horror and all these different things, right? And he was like, right. what? And I'm like, you need to go change your shoes, like change your, like, you know, and
yes, burn
in
them.
Hindsight, I don't know, maybe he didn't have to do all those things. And, you know, but when you're a mom and you have this little perfect, wonderful child that you brought into the world and you're supposed to keep them safe, you are like, yeah, so get your shoes out. You and your shoes need to mm-hmm. go.
Oh, yeah. Well, and for me, my house, you know, some people might say, well, that's kind of overprotective and whatnot. But for me, my house is my safe spot for my kids, yes. right? They have to go out into the world and maneuver and figure out ways to stay safe. Well, in my house, in our house, in their house, I don't feel like they should have to. I don't feel like they should have to maneuver at all. I feel like they should be able to relax. And so that's been my decision to keep our home, at least until we started food allergy treatment, yeah. to keep our home allergen free. And then what's funny is, you know, I think we have new research now showing that maybe, you know, we could have predicted in a way what my younger son's allergy would be. He only has a sunflower seed allergy. Oh. He had eczema. So my older one has the longer list. And then my younger one just has sunflower seeds. And, you know, sun butter is so popular as an allergen friendly, they call it, you know, that phrase is always yeah. kind of controversial because everybody has different allergens. But, yeah. You know, we used it all the time because nuts were, you know, we couldn't use nut butters in our house. And so then my younger one comes around and has, you know, eczema and things. We're eating it all around him. And I know research is not final on any of that, but I have heard the phrase, you know, through the skin, allergies begin. And so I often feel like, well, that was around a lot when he had this kind of broken, irritated eczema skin. And then sure enough, we fed him sun butter at around 7 months. And that's his only food allergy. So, it's really interesting. And I like following the research, but it's also hard because I like yes and no's. I like, you know, like solid lines. And there's a lot of gray space still in the food allergy world when it comes to information and research. I feel like we're so very behind on all of it. And I just want to know why, right? We all want to know, like, why is this our story? Why right. do our children have food allergies? Do either you or your husband have them?
So I do not have any food allergies. My husband is an interesting story. He has, they've diagnosed him with fibromyalgia. And this is just like a total side note where I digress a little bit. Anybody that is in the fibromyalgia world, they may or may not be able to resonate with this, but we kind of feel like us personally, this is just the world according to Lisa, not a doctor. But we kind of feel like fibromyalgia is a catch-all for maybe some things that they don't know about yet, if that makes mm-hmm. any sense. But at any rate, mm-hmm. so he has some health issues. And with that, it's very interesting. He will have actual food allergy, IgE, change. It's weird. Mm. And so he will be, and not IgG, because, you know, there's the difference between the IgG that's more of like an intolerance and then IgE, which is more of a true food allergy. And so sometimes he will be allergic to certain things and then he'll go back to get tested and he will actually have body reactions. He's never been anaphylactic yet, but he has been advised by the allergist to carry an EpiPen because you can never predict a future reaction. But he has had like the throat itching, the mouth tingling, the, you know, different things, hives. But he's luckily, knock on wood, not been anaphylactic. So he's an interesting specimen, but yes. he didn't have that his whole life. That was more like a later in life thing. And I have five kids. Only the oldest has the anaphylactic food allergies. And then after the past couple of years, after like some illnesses, like a combination of like the flu and other things, I don't know if it's because of that or it's a coincidence, but my 13-year-old became dairy intolerant. We're hoping she grows out of that. When we were talking with family members, they said that like her great-grandfather was dairy intolerant for a couple of years and then got over it. So that's weird, but we're hoping for that. Maybe it's like a genetic thing. I don't know. And my youngest daughter, which is my second youngest child, she's 8. Around the same time that my 13-year-old was having this dairy intolerance, she all of a sudden was, we thought, just becoming picky and not eating certain things and losing weight and all these different things. And I started Googling and I found that she was having some, all of, like, when we Googled, even though you should probably just go straight to the doctor, right? But it's like, not to get on Google. She was having all of these things that were pulling up, like celiac and gluten intolerance. And so we cut out, we're like, okay, well, before we go to the doctor, let's just go ahead and try to cut out all gluten and see if you feel better. We did that. And it's been literally night and day, very quickly in a short amount of time. She's like all of a sudden better. She's just all of a sudden, so now we're kind of on that path towards testing, because then you have to reintroduce gluten for anybody that's in the celiac world. But yeah, so that's kind of our story. And my other two kids, nothing. So it's really weird how much more common all of these, like, food intolerances, food allergies, celiac, autoimmune issues, fibromyalgia, you know what I mean? Like, where is all this? It wasn't around when we were younger. And I think that goes back to what you were saying earlier, is that I can so relate to you when I never considered food allergies. I never, I didn't even know that. And so my son, he was born in 07, and then had his first reaction in 08, 2008. And the food allergy world has come quite a long way since then. But as far as education and awareness in the general world community, if you've never had it in your family, whenever I tell the story, I'm like, I know this sounds so ridiculous, guys, but, like, I didn't know you could be allergic to peanuts. I didn't at that point in time. And like you said, when you said something about, that's, you know, I know this sounds so silly that I didn't know these things, but it's really not. And the more that you share that story, I think it kind of helps other parents feel better too, because I think so many can relate to, I didn't realize, you know, like, and,
that's one thing about my page that I think is really cool. You know, there's, whenever there is something that goes viral, you know, there's a lot of downfall to that, because, you know, you see the trolls show up and leave kind of ugly comments on your post. But the good news is that it means the algorithm is showing it to a lot of different people, a lot of people who aren't in the food allergy world. And that's what I think is really cool, because they might be learning something. They might be learning, you know, about food allergies for the first time, or seeing me and my family and meeting, if you will, a food allergy family for the first time and seeing a struggle that we deal with. And even just that basic awareness is better. That way, if somebody in their family does have a reaction, or maybe their child is in class with somebody who has a food allergy, they may have a little more compassion or a little bit more understanding. And so, you know, there's good and bad to the social media world, but I think that that is one of the major pluses for sure.
I was actually going to ask you about that, because I first came across you on TikTok.
Okay. I'm so bad at TikTok.
I rarely get on there. I really don't love TikTok, but it's kind of one of those things where it's like, oh, it's just like, it's this place that, in my opinion, is kind of like a cesspool of just whatever, like social media. Mm-hmm. And I really don't like going on there. But then, and I talked about this in my Instagram stories, maybe a year or maybe a year and a half or two ago, but, and I'm like, guys, I get it. Like, it's just, you know, I don't even know how to explain it. But then at the same time, if all of us choose to not get on there because it's blah, you know, like, we don't want to go on there, the icky, dirty place. If we don't, then we're not helping make that place any better. We're not putting that accurate information out there. And kind of like what you're saying, where the trolls come out, but also the same thing for being on TikTok or other platforms, especially when it's that younger community, to be able to put good information out there. And so for that, I really do like getting on there. But again, I don't get on there much, but I did come across you on there. And I did notice, like, you have had lots of videos that get lots of traction, and same with Instagram, you have. And there's kind of two parts to this question, you know, about the trolls and kind of like, how does that feel and how do you handle it? And what's like the mental emotional toll? And I mean, that's got to be hard, right? But then also, I love that you talk about the silver lining. And it's so true because you're putting good factual information out there.
Yeah. You know, I think my background is in TV news. So I was a TV news reporter for about a decade before switching gears to something a little more flexible and family conducive. And I think that set me up for success on social media, not in the way that you might be thinking, but because we had a lot of trolls, if you will, in that world too, right? Mm-hmm. Like the people would email the station and say, I hate her hair today, or, you know, that dress makes her look big, or, you know, whatever it might be.
And it's so really, you took your whole time out of your day to let us know that.
Yes. Yes. Thank you so much for opening your Gmail.
And I can relate.
That out.
Yeah. Before we got started today, we were relating how I was in the radio world. And it is different. Radio and TV are different, but you still have those same people that will call in and they're like, I don't like your voice. And you're like, great. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Let me alter everything about my appearance because of this one random person that I've never met in my life and their opinion. Yeah. No, I think it just, it builds up that thicker skin. And so I don't have that much issue with the trolls. I will say I don't usually respond to them. I kind of just let them sit there because my thought is, you know, what you type, like your digital legacy, it lives on. And I want people to see exactly who they are. You know, I mean, there might be some people who are mean and nasty too and agree with them and, you know, that sort of deal. But for the most part, I think they are shown for exactly who they are. And the second part of that is what I mentioned earlier, that, you know, as people go back and forth, you know, debating some sort of issue in the comments of something, the algorithm then sends it to more people. And while there might be some more angry people, there's a whole lot more people who are learning something or who are inspired. And so I kind of try to focus on that.
Like, thank you for boosting my algorithm.
Yeah.
I'm not going to engage with you.
Yes, exactly. And it's all about, trying to get the word out about food allergies in general and inclusion, you know, for our children. That's what's important to me. And again, if I can help just take the work out of it for some allergy parents by, I don't know, showing a product that I just found or showing how we managed to do a road trip or, you know, whatever it might be. I mean, that's my reason for continuing to show up there. That, and I'm inspired by a lot of the people who message me and their stories. I'm sure you talk to plenty of people too on this podcast. And, you know, it is inspiring to hear the different struggles that people go through and how they manage them. And then also, like you said, to know that you are not alone in these feelings and in these experiences. It kind of takes it takes some of the edge off to know that other human beings are feeling exactly the way you're feeling.
Because sometimes, even though you look at the numbers, right, like 32 million people or, you know, there's all these numbers and statistics, 1 in 13 children, or I think it's 1 in 10 adults. And I don't have all my facts and figures right in front of me. So if I'm off a little bit, I apologize, but I'm pretty sure those were the last stats I had read. But that sounds like a lot, right? It is a lot.
Right.
But then in your normal day-to-day life, doesn't it sometimes feel like, where are those 1 in 13? You know, where are the other 1 in 10? Because it doesn't seem like they're everywhere, even though they are. And maybe they're just quietly living with it or, you know, they got confident in living with it and they don't talk about it. And it's just life as it is. But at any rate, it can feel very lonely. And I love when other people share. Like if you go to Colorado or if you go wherever, Hawaii or Disneyland or all the different places, I love when others share because it helps me think of different trips that our family could take. And even if you have different food allergies than what we manage, it still is great to have those ideas. Like, oh, I've never heard of that brand. I wonder if it would also work for our food allergies, or I've never been to that, you know, place, you know, I would love to see that with my family. That's a great idea. And so it kind of just opens up the world because as soon as, and speak for yourself also, but I felt like when my son got his food allergy diagnosis, I felt like I envisioned his world getting a lot smaller. And I felt like as a mom, I envisioned my world getting a lot smaller. And so when you see other people doing things, I feel like it opens up doors and it makes your world bigger, which feels good.
Right. And we all need a little bit of a push sometimes. I mean, I think it's lying to say that it doesn't get a little bit smaller. I mean, doors do absolutely close. And I think, you know, you hear a lot of some people call it toxic positivity, and it's like, don't let it get you down, or, you know, you can still live a full life. Well, of course, right? I mean, of course you're going to live a happy life, and you can choose, you know, the way you're going to handle a situation or rephrase something in your mind. But I do think it's important to realize that our lives as food allergy families are in fact different than other people's lives. We do have fewer things that we can do, or places that we can eat, or foods that we can safely buy. I mean, that is just a fact. And so I think it's okay to be really, really sad about that sometimes, or angry, or any other emotion that you're feeling. And I think that's another thing that I like to talk about on my page is, you know, it's twofold. You can feel how you're feeling, and you can express that out loud, and it might actually help you work through that feeling and emotion of something happening, you know, something that you experienced maybe at school or a birthday party. And then you can also move past it and not linger there for a long time and go do fun things that your family can do. It can be both. And I think sometimes people try to, especially people who aren't in the allergy space, you know, well-meaning relatives will often be like, but you can do this, or look at this cake you can have. And of course, that is important. And we do have to focus on the positives, you know, but I think sometimes that shuts down the real true reality and feelings that we have as food allergy parents. And again, having community with other food allergy families makes people feel better for that very reason. They're seen and they're heard, and that is important.
It is. And I am on the same page with you and wholeheartedly agree. I feel like, and especially developmentally, you know, I guess I would compare it to brushing something under the rug. So if there's, you know, my son wants to go to a birthday party and he's 5 years old and he's super sad when he sees everybody else eating this, like, because, you know, when you're younger, it's not just like chocolate cake with chocolate frosting. It's like, sometimes it has like a bulldozer on top, or it's in the shape of a really cool cartoon. And when you're a kid, like, let's be honest, like, that's really freaking cool. And if you can't have it, that really freaking sucks. You know, and it hurts. And so the way that I always handled it, and, you know, and as I was doing it, I was like, maybe I'm messing my kid up. I don't know. Like, we'll find out. And now fast forward, he's 16 years old. He's one of the most confident kids I know. And it doesn't mean that there's only one way to quote unquote skin the cat. There's other parents that I'm sure have done it differently. And their kid probably is also super confident and lives a great life. So I think, you know, a couple of things here to unpack. Like, one, there's not just one way to raise a food allergy kiddo. And you know, my way worked really great for us. I'm sure other people can say the same for theirs, even if they did it differently. But then also, I'm with you, though. And that's kind of how the path that we took is that let's not brush it under the rug. Let's talk about this. I agree, Stetson. I think this sucks, too. It is crummy. Mm-hmm. I would be so bummed. I would be so sad. Like, I get it. I feel you, buddy, you know? And I think for him, that really helped him to be like, okay, somebody's acknowledging that this is a bummer. Mm-hmm. This is not fun. And then, so it's like, stop, go back, acknowledge, relate. And then that's when you can bring in the, but at least we have this. You know what I mean? Like, you know, right. It's better than having nothing. And then you can kind of talk about, or maybe go that route. But I really do. And this is, you know, again, the world according to Lisa. I think it's really good to acknowledge and kind of own it, because then you can embrace maybe that ugly part. That's right. Kind of the bummer. And then I think it builds for a better foundation to go ahead and then be positive, because you've embraced and owned and acknowledged and maybe even loved that crummy part.
Right. And I think it's important too, and this is one of the reasons, going back to something you spoke about in the little introduction bit, is about our food allergy family camp that we started, is that food allergies affect the entire family. It's not just that, you know, child, your younger or older son or whoever in your family has food allergies. I mean, the entire family experiences what food allergies bring to the table in one way or another, whether it's because it's dictating where the family is going to dinner, or because, you know, we all love and care about so-and-so and they're feeling upset that they didn't have the cake at the party, or mom and dad are stressed because, you know, they're trying to bake cupcakes at 10 a.m. or 10 p.m., excuse me, for the, you know, celebration at school the next day. I mean, it is an entire kind of family unit, family affair, even if only one child in the family has food allergies. And so that's why with this camp that we started, me and these two other ladies here in Texas, we wanted to include the whole family at camp, because that way siblings of people with food allergies can meet and relate to each other, as well as the food allergy kiddos themselves. And then, of course, the parents, just having that opportunity to connect on like an in-person, personal level about what it means to be a food allergy parent. So Camp Bumblebee is the name. I know you mentioned it. It was the first year we did it. We kept it super, super small, but we're really excited to have it grow in the years to come. I was kind of brought into it. These two girls that have been friends for a really long time and have a connection to a host camp, if you will. So they have all of the like rock climbing walls, ropes courses, the barn, the, you know, craft facilities. It's a beautiful place. It's not like, you know, tent on the ground. It's cabins and, you know, this beautiful space in between Houston and Austin, Texas. And they host camps. It's called Camp for All. And their mission is for any, whether it's, you know, a medical issue or any kind of illness for children who have something that might keep them from a traditional camp. They have different organizations and nonprofits bring their groups in and have the ability to make camp work for them. So even people who say they're in a wheelchair, all the paths are wide enough, you know, it basically anything that any extra needs, they can meet those. And so we were able to work with Camp for All to develop Camp Bumblebee, and our camp is hosted there. And we did this time around, we had two nights, kind of 3 days, and a lot of really amazing activities. And we'll do it again in 2023 and hopefully be able to accept more families. But it's a beautiful way for families to be able to get together and again, connect and kind of not have to worry about food allergies at all. All of the food was designed, the menu, for our families to be safe and not have to check labels. Obviously, the labels are there if people wanted to check them, but we, as three food allergy moms, made it so that food allergies weren't a concern, that everybody could eat everything, which was really, really, really special. So I'm excited to kind of delve into that again for 2024 and grow it. And hopefully, you know, one day more and more of these types of camps will be able to pop up around different states so that more people can be involved. But, you know, social media is one thing, but being together in person is another. So I'm excited, like you said, that things are changing and that more people are talking about it and there are more resources for people to get involved and to meet each other and to, you know, do things to feel that sense of community.
Absolutely. And I love everything that you mentioned about that. And going back to what you had kind of kicked it off with, how food allergy affects the whole family, it really does. And I mean, I'm sure just like you could, there's so many, as you were saying that, all these thoughts were of past experiences and times were coming back to me of siblings and, you know, experience it on behalf of or connected to my son. And one in particular, not necessarily sibling experience, but our entire family we went on an extended family trip back east. And it was when my son was much younger and I was still learning how to navigate this food allergy world. And quite frankly, it never ends. I do feel like eventually it starts getting a little bit easier as they become, they develop mentally, are more able to, as opposed to like 2 years old, where you're like, don't, no, you can't put your finger in other people's mouths and then back in your own. You know, like there's less of having to worry about things like that. And they actually listen to you a lot more. But you always are learning, right? Because there's just new experiences every day. Like even if you go to the same restaurant you've always gone to. But at any rate, I was much younger. He was much younger. We had less children. It was just like a whole different world, I feel like, looking back at that time. But at any rate, we were with a lot of extended family. And they were also still learning. And even though we dealt with it every day, they didn't. And so it wasn't that they were intentionally trying to be jerks or rude. You know,
right.
They just didn't live it every day. And even though I kept trying to tell them and help them and teach them and lead them and guide them, we ended up at this one restaurant. It was in Amish country. And I really feel like a lot of the Amish love peanut butter. Because everywhere we went, there was like peanut this and peanut butter that. And I was like, oh, I love your quilts and I love all these other things, but can we not do the peanut everywhere? I felt like there's peanut everywhere. And at the time, he's unfortunately since then grew into more allergies. But at that time, it was peanut and shellfish. So anyway, all of our family, they're like, oh yeah, we're going here. Anyway, we get there and they literally have next to the bottles of ketchup on every table. It was kind of like a diner type atmosphere. They literally had squirt bottles of peanut, this like peanut butter sauce.
I was like,
are you for real? This is like Texas Roadhouse, like Amish version of Texas Roadhouse. Like instead of a bucket of peanuts, there was this squirt bottle of peanut butter. I don't know if it was like a peanut butter sauce or peanut butter, but anyway. And I looked at my husband. I'm like, I just don't feel comfortable because he had also reacted like when we go to Disneyland and other places, if I got one of those wet ones and cleaned the table off and I'm doing all this due diligence, right? Like there had been a few times where he would still get hives. I mean, he's sensitive. And so anyway, I looked at my husband, I'm like, we can't go in there. And this is your family. Like you need to talk to them. And so he's like, okay, well, we're just not going to go in there. We're just not going to eat with them. And I could tell that like my whole extended family was like, what? You guys aren't going to eat with us? And they were trying to process it and figure out what was going on. I could tell my mother-in-law felt bad. My father-in-law felt bad. Like they were kind of torn in there, like, caught off guard. And they didn't understand. They're like, but it's in a bottle. It's not going to whatever. Like they just didn't get it, you know, like about cross contact and, you know, and that's not the time to try and teach everyone.
No.
And so my husband, he's like, it's fine. I'll just go tell my family. I don't even know. Maybe they had Google Maps back then. I don't know. this was a little while ago. And so somehow we found somewhere to eat. And we went and we ate alone, our little family. And that has happened a couple other times where at Thanksgiving, everybody was like, yeah, we're at Disneyland for Thanksgiving, which is not very traditional. And they're like, yeah, we're going to go to Goofy's Pizza Kitchen. And if you are familiar with Disneyland, they have huge peanut butter and jelly pizzas there. And I just was like, I'm sorry. I just, with cross contact, like, yeah, I know he can order a different pizza. But with that huge, literally peanut butter and jelly open-faced pizza, I'm not, right. It's beyond no, like it, no.
Yeah.
And so we ate Thanksgiving dinner alone across the street at an off resort restaurant. And you know, that's like, to me, I was like, it was hurtful. And I know it hurt my son. I don't know to what extent, because like, he's a young boy. Do you know what I mean? At the time. Yeah. And so he doesn't express his emotions quite as well as maybe a mature adult. But like me and my husband were talking about it and I'm like, that just like hurts, you know, because Thanksgiving to me, regardless of any food allergies or anything else, it's first and foremost about family, you know? Right. And so to me, like I would eat Taco Bell with you if that was safe for you on Thanksgiving so that I could be with you.
Right.
Or, you know what I mean? Like, or I would eat whatever, like I would eat at a gas station. I love you so much. I would eat gas station food with you, because you're my family and it's about spending time with family. So I guess what I'm trying to say is like, it really does affect the whole family. And in defense of like any in-laws or friends or anybody else, like they just don't know and they just don't understand. And as much as like, yeah, I have a podcast, I have social media, I am a published cookbook author, like I am an advocate, I am an educator. And so even though I'm all those things, it is really hard sometimes to get people to wrap their minds around the education and the awareness, even down to like cross contact and other things. It's an uphill battle. It really is. So for you to have this camp like Camp Bumblebee is huge. It's so huge.
It's really it was meaningful for me, and I think for all of the families, like I said, to connect and to share those shared experiences, just like we're doing right now. You know, we all have those stories of family members who maybe just don't get it, or, you know, times when we felt excluded or lonely as a family, and sharing is powerful, you know, and so hearing your story even just now made me remember some things that have happened in our past. And it made me feel like, okay, you know, this isn't just my story. This is a shared experience, and we can all kind of work on it together. Like, how can we make sure that this doesn't happen to the next family or to us again? And just feel comforted in knowing that like our feelings of feeling excluded aren't odd or strange, or we're not being oversensitive, you know? So,
important to take away is like, in addition to what you're saying is, yeah, like I'm not alone and it's not weird. It is normal to feel that way. It kind of hurts. You know, but yes. Also one of the things that I've taken away over the years, when I hear people like yourself or others share those stories that they resonate with you and you can connect, is that sometimes I think it's just a little bit of human nature to think, like, how can they not get it? Or how can they do that? Or how can they, you know, but it's, and in the moment, sometimes it's like easy to go to that immediate, like, how could they do that? But then to take a step back and be like, okay, clearly lots of people do this. Lots of family members do this. I'm sure all those family members love their family. It's not out of, you know, spite or dislike or intentional, but a lot of times, even your family members that are so close to you that you feel like, I feel like I've educated you so many times, you know,
right.
It's just that sometimes they just don't quite get it yet. And that's okay. They're still, sometimes you have to meet people where they're at, I guess is what I'm saying. Because it's not that they don't love you. And sometimes you need to hear that. Oh, okay. It's not that my in-law doesn't love me, or it's not that the teacher at school doesn't love my child, or do you know what I mean? Sometimes you just need to hear, it's not that they're coming from a place of, because sometimes it can feel that way. It's not coming from a place of dislike or not loving or not just being human and kind. But we just have to meet them where they're at. And when they don't live that world every day, sometimes it really does take a long time for them to wrap their head around it. Cause it is kind of crazy that food can kill, right? Like it's kind of crazy.
Right. Yeah. I'm all about showing people grace and giving them time to kind of come around and to understand. But I also am a proponent of, you know, protecting your space and your kind of heart and mind and your family, in the sense that if they're ever is somebody in your life who you've tried many, many times to get them to kind of understand the gravity and the seriousness of a life-threatening allergy, I think sometimes it's better for some people's mental health in certain situations, stories I've heard from people, to just say, okay, you know, not cut them out of your life completely, but okay, mm-hmm. we're going to protect our kind of time and energy and space and maybe not spend so much time with Aunt Jean or whoever it might be, or, you know, just telling people in advance what your plans are. So, you know, oh, you know, I know we typically go to this pizza spot, but that's not something we're going to do because we don't feel comfortable there based on the severity of my son's food allergies. We're going to go eat over here. I'd love for y'all to join us. But if not, no big deal, you know, and then they can kind of have that responsibility on them. But setting that expectation kind of before you even get started on an activity or vacation. I know I went on a big family reunion vacation with like 22 people in one house And that was a really scary thing this past summer. Going into it, I was like, how in the world am I going to do this? but we had a kind of an email chain, and despite kind of these like deep buried down feelings of me being like, I don't want to be an imposition, and I don't want to be the dramatic person who's having to explain these things or to, you know, make people do certain things, I said, you know what? No, I would want my son to advocate the way I'm advocating for him right now while he's a child. So, and there's nothing wrong with having food allergies just as any other disability. So we shouldn't feel guilty or bad about that. So I put my big girl panties on and I wrote emails ahead of that vacation. And I said, this is kind of where our line is. This is kind of what we feel comfortable with. We feel comfortable with, obviously, your child drinks milk every day. They're going to need, I'm not going to tell your child they can't have milk. But we're going to wash our hands and we're going to ask that you do the same. And we're going to keep the milk in this one particular area. And we're going to not have peanuts at all in the house because we can go, you know, 5 days without peanut butter. It is possible, believe it or not. And so, you know, I set those expectations and I didn't feel bad about it. And guess what? Like everybody was cool with it. I think even if somebody deep down was kind of like, well, you know, that seems like some rules I didn't think I was going to have to follow on family vacation, but they like, they get over that, you know, they can read it. They can have that moment, that feeling. And then they are like, all right, it's fine. You're right. I don't need peanut butter. Or you're right. I can have my child sit at this table and drink the milk instead of running around and splashing it everywhere. You know, and like you said, people generally, your family generally does love you very much. And so when that icky, like feeling of something different happening passes, then everybody's over it. And then you can be safe and happy and everybody's together and it's fine. And that's exactly how it worked out. So that's usually kind of from going through it, how I handled it and how it worked for us is how I try to, you know, tell people if they're ever going into that similar vacation, you know, set your expectation, protect your family. But also know that most people have good intentions. But if they don't, you know, they don't. And you just kind of have to know that and draw that line.
I love that story. And I love the way that you navigated it. And I think it's so important to, I do focus a lot on give grace, give grace, give grace. But there have been times that I've also had to, where I've given grace so many times. And then there were resistant family members. And it got to the point where I told my husband, I'm like, okay, like we're getting to a point where we've got to basically set a boundary now. Because there's just like, I'm giving grace and I'm not feeling reciprocated.
You know? Right.
So something's got to give. And so it got to the point where we were like, okay, well, we're not going to go to XYZ activity with everyone. And they're like, why? Because we have all of my husband's side of the family lives here. All of my side of the family lives here. And so we get together a lot with extended family. Like we see our extended family at least monthly, but also multiple times a month. And so that in our familial situation, that was like weird. Like, wait, what? You're not going to this, you know, thing that we all do every month or whatever. And we're like, no, I'm sorry. Like we just, we're tired of like constantly asking for what we feel are very fair things. You know, we're not being, you know, quote unquote crazy about it. And we just don't feel like there's that respect. There's that buy-in, you know, and it's just become too much. It's too stressful. It's putting him at risk. And we're not going to do it, but that's okay. We still love you guys. And we'll see you at this next activity. Mm-hmm. And we made it like a non-issue, not a big deal, but we did say like, we're not going to do that anymore, you know? And I think it took that moment for them to be like, oh, like they're serious. Yeah, we're serious. We've been serious the whole time, you know?
Right.
But family's weird, right? Like everybody has unique family situations and everybody's family dynamics are different and personalities are different. And for whatever reason, I felt like they didn't take us serious until we were like, yeah, so we're not going. And we weren't trying, we didn't go into it with the intention of trying to be manipulative or, you know what I mean? But it was just like, once they saw that we finally put a boundary down because we were always so nice about it, turn the other cheek about it, you know, give grace. And it wasn't until we were nice about it. Nope, we're not going this, like, here's our boundary that they were like, oh, no. Okay, well, what can we do? Right. And I'm like, is that all it took? I would have done this so long ago.
Right. Yes.
But I was trying to keep family peace.
I know. It's tricky. It's tricky as you get older. I feel like you definitely, you know, learn where your boundaries are and you feel better about kind of putting them into place. But you're right. It's tricky to do that initially, because I think especially our generation too, like we are people pleasers, you know, we're supposed to follow the rules and not, you know, ruffle any feathers. And so even just advocating for our own children and, you know, making sure that they're safe can kind of feel hard, which sounds crazy when you say it out loud, but it really can. And so, yeah, that's another thing I try to kind of use whatever platform I have on social media to spread that message as well.
I love it. Now, before you get online, before you share things, like whether it's TikTok or Instagram, because you kind of fell into the social media food allergy world, right? When you first decided to start sharing, it was just kind of on a whim and I'm just going to, you know, share this trip. And then it kind of evolved. But what boundaries? I feel like, so when I first started sharing online, there wasn't as many people as there are today sharing, whether people want to refer to all of us as influencers or whatever, right? There's so many people online sharing now, which is great because that's more education and awareness. But because it's kind of all evolved and happened so fast, I think one of the things that people aren't remembering, and kind of going back to actually to a comment that you made earlier about our footprint, right, that we're leaving on social media and out there, what boundaries would you suggest people consider before sharing their food allergy journey online? Because
really
there's not just the personal, like my last name or what state or what city or things like that for maybe safety reasons or, you know, which that's like one whole facet of it, if you will. But then there's also, you know, sometimes people will share when their child's having an anaphylactic reaction or in the hospital post reaction or like, there's just so many different things. And then now you're starting to see people say, you know, talk about permission of the child, you know, like thinking about, do you have, you know, and I'm not judging anybody in any way, shape or form. I don't want to offend anyone or anything like that, because everybody's different and maybe their child is fine with it and maybe they're fine with it. And, so there's just, so it's not the same as sharing fashion.
Yeah.
Right. Like there's fashion influencers and there's interior decorating influencers. And, so this is,
I will say like, the term influencer is weird to me. Yeah. And it does not feel, I can't put that on and feel good about that. I don't, not that it's wrong to be an influencer, but it just doesn't feel like me. Mm-hmm. Certainly with any kind of like audience, there is influence. So I get that. But, you know, I feel like I don't like necessarily, you know, plastering your child's face, my child's face on the internet. However, you know, I think I see people that make accounts that are pure, like it's for profit, like they're trying to earn an income and the entire page is based solely on their children. Mm-hmm. To me, that feels a little different. And again, everybody draws a line in a different place, right? Mm-hmm. I share my children's faces and their names. That's pretty much it. Mm-hmm. But you know, my entire page is about food allergies. And the reason I'm talking about it is because my children have food allergies. Mm-hmm. I also think I'm relatable because I'm sharing about my family and people are interested in people that they're following. You know, I don't think share, you know, intimate photos or details. You know, and I try to be mindful of kind of not doing, and as the heat gets older, I think I'll be even more aware of like, you know, what do you feel? How do you feel about me sharing this? Mm-hmm. But right now I kind of think I'm somewhere in between. I'm not a, you know, cover your face with the emoji sticker, kind of person that feels like you have to do that. But I'm also, you know, trying to share a lot about how it feels to be a parent and how I personally feel or how I am personally navigating things or, you know, doing the parenting thing at the birthday party or, you know, talking with the teacher or how I've done the 504 plan for kindergarten or, you know, kind of the aspects of food allergy life that are really about being a parent and my experience. But of course, my kids are going to trickle into that. And so to me, that's what feels comfortable. But like you said, everybody feels differently. And I respect how anybody else wants to do it. I also think the world of social media is so crazy new when you think about it. Like it's not been around all that long. And so I think like with anything else, we got to like check out the research and see, you know, as time goes on, I might change my mind one way or another.
And reassess and reevaluate.
And I think that's what we do with everything, right? So I don't know. I think that there is some gray space there, and I'm just doing the best I can. But I do feel like being authentic to who I am and my family is why people show up. And, you know, I have actually made like friendships. I enjoy talking to people on there. I think you do learn from seeing, say, a picture of, you know, a hive on my kid's arm that was not actually an allergic thing. It was a viral thing from his strep throat, you know, like something like that. It's like, oh gosh. Yeah. Like then when your kid has strep throat and gets that, you're like, no. Like Sarah's kid had that. I think it was similar. Like maybe it's not an allergic reaction. Like maybe I can just bring them to the pediatrician right now and get some antibiotics. You know, it's like, there's things like that, that I think serve a purpose. But of course you can cross the line. So it's tricky. I didn't really answer your question, but, just kind of muddled through it, but that's how we handle things, or I handle things.
Did answer it even unintentionally or not knowing, because I think what it comes down to is that as long as you are consciously thinking about it and you know what I mean, it's going to be different for each person. And as long as you feel comfortable with it and your child feels comfortable with it, to each their own. I'm sure at some point there's some things that I think everybody might agree with, like, okay, that's not okay in any realm of any kind of social media. But for the most part, with people with good intentions, I think, to each their own, but just to be aware of it, you know, kind of like you were saying earlier, what you put online, it's there, forever. And there are trolls. And so that just might be something that people want to think of, because not everybody will be made out for the trolls that come along.
Right.
I think it was a great answer. And then people can kind of look at that and be like, okay, well, I don't feel comfortable with it, and that's okay. And I will not put my kid's face or other people that are like, oh no, I'll share way more than that. So I think it's good. I think it's good for people to hear that there's all sorts of ways of doing it. And one of the things that I've learned from watching your journey is I see a lot of people share and refer to OIT. Oral immunotherapy. But I've seen you share your child doing, I think it's the TIP program, the tolerance induction program. Is that right?
Yes.
And is that, how does that differ from OIT?
It's similar in a lot of ways, different in a lot of ways. I'm certainly not a clinical person or a doctor to explain it fully and completely, but TIP does things a little differently in that they start treating somebody's allergies by treating foods that are biosimilar to the allergic food. So if you go into an OIT program, chances are you're allergic to peanuts. They're going to start you on, you know, these tiny micro doses of peanuts and slowly work your way up. We do something similar in that we slowly work through foods. But for example, you know, we look at something like peas have biosimilar proteins to peanuts. They are both legumes. Some people are allergic to both. We've never been allergic to peas, but you know, you start with pea protein and you slowly work through that. And the idea is that you're sort of priming the body with these kind of distant cousins to the actual allergen, so that it's more ready to accept the allergen when you start microdosing it. They also use AI to kind of formulate people's individualized plans. A lot of times, not always, OIT has come so far, even in the last, I think, like 3 or 4 years, I've seen it go from pretty much only doing OIT for peanut to doing OIT for a million things, or only doing, you know, OIT for people under a certain like IgE blood score. Now, a lot of times people will take them no matter what, but TIP was kind of one of the first programs that I'm aware of that said, you know, we'll take anyone, we'll treat anything. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you've had 10 anaphylactic reactions or none, we're going to do this kind of same extensive set of testing, use computer models and data to come up with a individualized treatment plan for each person. And we're going to kind of test and see things along the way to make sure that you're reaching full food freedom. So a lot of times also OIT used to only get people, and oftentimes still does, to what people call bite-sized protection. So like if you accidentally eat the allergen, then you likely won't go into anaphylaxis. TIP has always promised from the beginning, their entire thing has been food freedom, meaning you can eat the allergen as much as of it as you want, whenever you want, as often as you'd like. That was really, really appealing to me. I think, again, OIT programs are, some of them are already there. Many are getting closer to that point. But for me, I didn't want to put in a lot of work and effort to still be strapped by, like, say, a daily maintenance dose of every day you have to eat 5 peanuts to maintain bite-sized protection. I didn't want that ball and chain for my child. I really wanted to go all in. And if you can give me full food freedom, we'll do anything it takes to get there, pretty much. And it is a lot of effort. It is a lot of traveling. It is a lot of money. It is a lot of time every day on prep and maintenance. It's a lot of bribery, getting him to eat certain weird things. But, you know, I hope and I think it will all be worth it. And it's kind of still the wild, wild west. I think not this program, but in general, allergy world and treatment options. It's like nobody really knows everything. Mm-hmm. And we're all just kind of trying the best thing for us. And for a lot of people, strict avoidance is the best thing for them and their family, whether it's because of, you know, their financial situation or their, you know, location, or if it's just because mentally they don't want to do treatment. You know, it's a lot every day to be giving your child things they're allergic to. So I think everybody has to make that decision for themselves, but people are definitely interested in the journey. I'm sharing it because I think it's important to see the good, bad, and ugly of a treatment program. So people know what they're getting into if they do choose, in fact, to do TIP or OIT or whatever other treatment options are out there.
I think it's so good for people like yourself and your family to share, whether, like you said, whether it's TIP or OIT, to share those things. And just because we choose not to do it, it doesn't mean that I don't support others that do. I think sometimes, and it can happen within the food allergy community, where people feel like they have to take a side. And I'm like, it's all good, guys. Like, it's okay. Right. It's okay if they want to. You don't have to. You know, it's okay. Let them do it.
Yes,
my son totally is in several varsity sports. He's on varsity golf. And while that one's not like quite as active, it's a more chill, you know, sport. He's in wrestling and track and field. And I know with OIT, I don't know if this is the same with TIP because I don't know as much about TIP, is that around dosing time, you can't be very active or active at all. I think a lot of people have to like sit and chill. And he's very high endurance, active teenage boy. And that, for that reason, it wouldn't fit for him. And he's also of the mindset, him personally, because I've asked him and he's like, for him, he would just rather avoid it. He's like, yeah. I feel like all that effort, and whereas other people are like, no, totally, let's do it. That effort's worth it. And that's okay too. But for him, he's like, you know what? That just seems like a lot of effort. For me, it's easier to just like read the label, for example, and avoid it. Or, and that's okay too. And I think that's what it comes back to, is everybody's different, but thank goodness. And he might change his mind. And when he's an adult, maybe he'll want to do it and be so grateful for all the people like your child and others that have paved the way for it to become even better by the time he decides to do it, if he decides to do it. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I hope we do all of this work and for my son, and then, you know, in 5 years, they have a magic pill that you take to erase all allergies, and
wouldn't
we're still
nice?
Going to give him that pill and he's going to take it. And then we'll know for sure that, you know, it's like, everybody can do what works for their family, and everybody just wants answers, and they want, you know, help and support. Like, we all want the very same things. And I just hope that as a community, we can get there. And I think we will. I think there's enough people paying attention now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Everybody's just trying to live a full whole life, and it might look different for each person. They're just trying to get there however they see it's best for them. So I think that's wonderful. Now, talking a little bit before we get going about mental and emotional toll, we've talked a lot about the other things, but how have you navigated for you, for your child, for your family, stress or anxiety or grief? Like, I've grieved so many times. You know, I thought this, like my son, real quick, for example, he went to his first homecoming. And wow. There was a part of me that, not that I want my son out there, like making out with every girl at school or, you know, like,
right.
But like, let's just be honest though. Like when you get to that point with your teenage child, you want them to be able to experience the teenage years. Like, even if that's just like, you know, a little kiss at the end of the night on the doorstep. Like, when you have anaphylactic food allergies, it's not that. Because now he has to know that person well enough and know that his date likes him well enough that they're going to avoid the allergen for a certain amount of time and maybe even brush their teeth. And you know right. what I mean?
Yeah. No, so it takes the spontaneity out of things. And that's difficult for sure.
And letting go of maybe ideals that you thought were going to happen or.
Yes. Yes. There's a lot of, I've talked about that a lot too on my social media pages that, you know, grief is a very real thing that I think we all feel in different ways. And it seems to some, I think that would be listening that food allergies aren't a part of their life. They would say like, grief, are you kidding? Like, what about when you lose somebody, you know, that you love? And, you know, what about when somebody dies of cancer? And I mean, all of these things, of course, are, you know, situations to grieve, but there are different types of grief. We are losing something. It's not a person, but we are losing spontaneity. We are losing ideals or dreams that we once had for our lives and our families. And, you know, while again, we can't linger there for a long time, and that's important for your mental health, that you can find a way to move on or past or through, I should say, those feelings. But certainly I have grieved and continue to at different times, you know, dependent on the situation I am in. You know, I have talked before about being kind of a foodie. Like I love to try different and interesting foods. And, you know, that's been a big part of my husband and I's life. Before kids, we would like, that was our thing. We'd go out and try like fancy new restaurants and, different cuisines. And we talked so much about how one day we would have like those kids that you see, you know, instead of eating chicken tenders and fries, they were going to be the kids that, you know, ate the
sushi,
you know, different types of food. And that was something important to us. And it's not important to a lot of people, but it was important to us. And we lost that. Yeah. And so, you know, again, small potatoes, of course, compared to some really huge tragedies in the world. And it, you know, even personally in some people's lives. But again, both things can be true. We can grieve differently. And I think it's a universal feeling for allergy parents to grieve in one way or another.
Absolutely. Now, anyone that is listening, if they're like, wow, I like this mom, Sarah, I like her. Where they're like, oh, that Camp Bumblebee, it sounds so fun. If you would like to attend Camp Bumblebee, or they want to find you on social media, where do they go to find all those things?
Yeah. So my Instagram handle is at Food Allergies OTG. So it stands for on the go. That handle was taken, the full on the go. I don't know who owns it, but I had to abbreviate. So Food Allergies OTG. Also on TikTok, if you are a TikToker, I am not as active on there, but I try once in a while to dabble in that direction. And then Camp Bumblebee has a true website. It's campbumblebee.org. And then there's also an Instagram handle for Camp Bumblebee as well. We're going to be probably kicking off in the spring, some kind of early applications for that. And I'm going to put out something for like, if you're interested in learning more as we learn dates and more details, you know, kind of adding your email address to that. So definitely follow along if you're interested and want more information, because it's a really cool opportunity for anyone to connect with other food allergy families.
I love it. Sarah, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. It's been fun getting to know you and getting to know your story.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Be sure to follow Sarah and Food Allergies OTG online and on social media. This is the Food Allergy Talk podcast, where you can come to connect and leave uplifted, empowered, and ready for success.
I'm your host, Lisa Horn of Food Allergy PI. Thanks for tuning in to the Food Allergy Talk podcast. Don't miss a future episode. Let's stay connected. Be sure to subscribe at iTunes, Spotify, Google, Amazon, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Pandora, TuneIn Alexa, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Pocket Casts, Deezer, Listen Notes, Player FM, Podcast Index, and Reason FM. And until next time, remember, don't hesitate, investigate, and always carry two. This podcast is brought to you by the Everything Nut Allergy Cookbook, available wherever books are sold. Find details at foodallergypi.com. And be sure to join me over on Facebook, the Food Allergy PI Community Group, where we can connect, support, and share.